Hey, and welcome. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. So it's a Sunday. You know, a few weeks ago, I sat with my friend Andrew Clavin. We talked about many of the most important things in life. The Search is a show that I do with some of my best friends in sort of the media, political, entertainment, scientific space. And we just sit for a couple of hours, just talk about life. There's one part of our conversation from The Search that was actually really fascinating. I want to play for you. It's all about what it's like to raise kids. Are kids good? Are kids bad? Are they innocent? Or are they actually little devils? It was really sort of fascinating. I think you'll get a kick out of it. So many people are like, kids should make their own decisions. Kids are smart. Kids
oh
are kids
God.
Are
Where
kids are
that
kids
idea.
Are good. Kids are inherently good is one of the stupidest ideas I ever heard in my entire life. Kids are innocent. They're not good. They're not. That's not they're, the same
that's,
thing.
That's right. That's right. They are innocent, but they're not good.
You have to teach people to be good.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is
no,
a, they, this is why they, you civilize your children.
It's the wonderful. Actually, one of the wonderful things about them is they say all the things that you think, but you think, I hope nobody knows
oh
I'm thinking
God.
That.
Oh my God.
Everybody,
yeah, my daughter is famous for this. Apparently, my daughter the other day, she was in one of her classes. And she raised her hand for some sort of quiz. And the teacher comes over, and my daughter says, I want to ask a question. The teacher says, it's a quiz, I can't answer. My daughter says, so what do they pay you for?
And I was like, sure the apple hasn't fallen far from the tree.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I don't know whether to be angry or proud. Yeah. I mean, that's really good. I mean, that's my daughter is, yeah, she's like, she's whip smart, and she's got a mouth on her, and it's a problem. It's been a problem before. Her comebacks. I think I told you the one where like the older kid came to her when she was in first grade, and the older kid was like, you know, we're older than you, and she goes, yeah, that just means you're gonna die sooner.
Like, I was like, just
wow.
Like you.
It's like, wow, that's an amazing comeback. You're like, this is when she was like six. I'm like, that's a great comeback for like a 30-year-old. I mean, like a 6-year-old. But yeah, I mean, they're not good people, but they are, you know, they're cultivating it. Like you can see already the 9-year-old. You can see she's got like a deep moral sense. Like if she thinks something is bad or wrong, she gets very upset about it.
And you know, they see. I mean, this is the thing. It is like a magic power. If you're not an immoral person. You know, like, which you're not. I mean, it's like that you actually can say to them as they get older, you can say, don't do that. And you know, you don't have to raise your hand. You don't have to raise your voice.
Right.
It's just they think like, well, you know, I mean, I went, proudest moment of my life. One of the proudest moments of my life. I once said to my son, like, I never hit my kids. I never had to. You know, I could be scary, but I never like, you know.
Well, so first of all, rule, father does have to have the capacity to be scary.
Yes,
it's just
everything. Yes, absolutely.
It's like the George Patton. It's from Patton, right? It's not important for them to know. It's only important for me to know when I'm actually like angry. Yeah.
All right. So I said to him like, were you ever afraid I would hit you? You know, because I was frightening. You know, I could be frightening if they were doing something really stupid. And he said, no, that would have been wrong because I was so much smaller than you, and I knew you wouldn't do something wrong. I thought. You know,
that's a great answer.
That's a
wow.
Win, you know?
Wow. So I smacked him.
Just I knocked him unconscious. Smart aleck kid. but it does, you know, it goes back to some of the stuff we were saying. Having that family brings all that stuff into play in such a primal way that suddenly you think like, oh, this is why you do the right thing.
Right. Well, no, values become like the actual conversation.
Yeah.
Like no one has values conversations before you have kids.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, why, yeah.
Then you have kids and that becomes pretty much all your conversations.
Yeah.
It's like, because you actually have to understand your own values in order to justify them to your kids.
Right. Right. I mean, like so much stuff. Like when I first, was married, you know, like the idea that you couldn't sleep with anybody else was like kind of this kind of mountainous thing in my way, you know, and like, and the only thing that kept me from doing it was that I loved my wife and didn't want to get caught. It was really was true. I just thought like, if she catches me, I'm going to lose this woman that I really love, you know. And then one day it sort of occurred to me, like, actually, like, it's not sleeping with other people, it's actually being faithful. And the minute I, it's like a revelation. Like, it's stupid, but some of these things are like, you know.
Yeah.
I thought, like, actually having the quality of fidelity makes me somebody that she can look at and know that she's looking at the person I actually am, you know. Complete transformation. I thought, I don't have to struggle to be faithful. I only have to struggle to not do, you know.
It's right. Like, yeah. I mean, that's a really good insight. I mean, and I think that because people think they can have their cake and eat it too, right? I can be emotionally faithful to somebody, but
I wish I'd thought of that. About
exactly.
Damn.
No,
it's too late.
Again, one of that lie that marriage is a patriarchal institution. It's like, really, who's giving up who's giving up the thing?
Well, that is a funny thing. We were talking about those sophisticated intellectual women who are kind of thinking we should do marriage this way and do that. And I think like, the one thing they don't understand is like what men are like.
Yes.
You know, same way we don't really fully understand what women are like.
Right.
They don't get that men are giving up a lot for for marriage. I once said to somebody, you know, actually in a public forum, I can't remember what it was. I said, you know, the women's urge to have children and men's urge to sleep with a lot of women are equally powerful.
That's right, yeah, actually.
And they're so, very offended.
I mean, there's some study that I saw at one point. It was a study my dad had actually seen when he took a psychology class when he was back in college. Mm. And it was, I'd want to look this up. He apparently, what the study was, is they had, it was pupil dilation, like interest level. And so what they did is they showed men's pupils reacting to naked women.
Okay.
And then they showed women's pupils reacting to naked men. And what it showed is that they had equal levels of dilation. But then they showed women babies, and the pupil dilated twice the size. which is true. I mean, like, I've always said that you want to make, like, $1 billion, or $1 billion, you don't do webcam girls. You do baby cams for women. Like, just to watch, like, cute babies roam around, like, that, which is half of YouTube, right? It's like, oh, look, it's a baby, and it's laughing, and the baby's laughing. Like,
that's... Oh, my wife said the other day, she was listening to one of our grandkids laugh, you know, when he was a little baby. She says, like, heroin. I thought, like, yeah, kind of, you know.
But, you know, it's, I think that it's because, I think maybe because women have a natural drive to have kids, they think that they don't actually, that the societal push to have kids doesn't have to come out of duty, it can come out of love, and I don't think that's right. I think that because we as a society have glommed too much onto love, this means that we don't have as many kids. Huh. What I mean by that is that because the religious duty, right, the actual commandment to be fruitful and multiply, it seems like a weird commandment. Why would you have to command somebody to do that? It's like a thing people have done for literally all of human history. And the answer is because it's really tough and annoying, like at least 50% of the time.
Yeah.
And depending on what the kids are doing, like 85 to 90% of the time.
Right, right.
It can be really, really tough and really annoying, especially balancing a lot of kids. And so when you do it out of love, it's like, yeah, but I love this one. Like this one right in front of me, I love this one. And maybe my love will be diminished if I have a second one.
Yeah.
And what if I don't have enough love to go
right,
around?
Right, right, yeah.
And there's a lot of cost. I mean, like, I can't balance everything. And the answer is that, you know, the love comes... I wonder if there's a Judaism-Christianity distinction. From my viewpoint, when it comes to having kids, and also when it comes to God, the love comes after the duty.
Huh.
And I think that maybe one of the problems for our society when it comes to kids is it's the idea that the duty comes after the love. I think in almost every decision that's worth making, the duty comes before the love. I've said this to people about getting married, because again, to cite my father, he always said, like, it's not that you meet the girl that you want to marry and then you decide you want to get married. It's that you decide you want to get married and then you meet the girl you're going to marry.
Well, I think
you actually have a mental shift.
I think that is true. I think that, you know, I had a difficult youth, and I was in one of the happiest periods of my life. I was dating several women at the same time when I met my wife, and I thought, ah, there she is. And I think that's
a rarity.
Oh yes, I don't know. I was hit by lightning. I'm telling you, I don't know what it is. God is waiting to smite me in some terrible. But no, my marriage is, it's not unique, but it's very rare. I mean, I've had this 40 year romance. It's bizarre. I mean, it's bizarre. We don't fight. We don't do anything. We just, like, I'm telling you know.
That's weird.
It's weird. It is weird. I mean, and we.
That's wildly abnormal.
And unless she's lying, we adore each other. I know I adore. I'm sure I'm telling the truth. But and it's taught me everything. I mean, I don't think I would believe in God if I hadn't realized that love was a real thing. Like, I think that was what I thought, like, you know, I mean, I picked my wife up hitchhiking, you know.
This is interesting. I mean, so I do wonder whether the focus on love is from when Christianity was even more of a converting religion than when it was a dominant one.
Hmm.
Well, because the way that you draw people to, what you're saying is if you're drawing people to an institution they don't know, the way that you bring them in is love. Mm-hmm. You can't do it with duty because they feel no duty.
Right, right.
But once you have people in a society or in a civilization, I think the duty comes first and then the love comes after. Because I think that the vast majority of the time you do the thing, and once you do, and this is very Aristotelian, you do the thing, and then at a certain point after doing the thing long enough, you realize that you love the thing.
Well, I guess, maybe you're right about this just in terms of learning, because to me, the world without love, the world of power, which I've lived in, I've competed, you know, I've won, I've succeeded at the things that I've done and all this stuff, but I was standing once in Times Square, and there was this true crime, you know, with my name on it, mm-hmm. and this gigantic sign in Times Square. And I thought, it's doing nothing for me. You know, this is not what I want in life. You know, there's mm-hmm. something else that I want. And so I have followed love my whole life. I have done what I loved. You know, Jeremy yells at me about it. He says, you only do what you love. I, yeah. You know? and that has always been the right decision. And even when it has hurt me in the power realm, like I've written some book that I had to write and lost audience or the book failed or whatever, like, it's always been the right decision every single time. But that's real love. It's not love like, I feel good now. You know, it was
right. No, that's the high. The highest form is when the love and the duty are
that's
are,
what I
are similarly that's why oriented I'm hard time, or become identical.
That's
right?
why I'm having a hard time responding.
Right. That's why I'm saying that I think that for most people the one is generative of the other.
Uh huh.
Meaning that that's why I'm saying maybe it's true more when religions are attempting to convert people. The way you draw people in is with warmth and love and all of this. And
right.
religions where it's like you do the thing and then the way it, by doing the thing. This is why Judaism isn't good at converting people because it's like here's a bunch of stuff you do.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be like down to the minute. It's going to be like how you tie your shoes in the morning.
Right.
Literally in the Mishnah Berurah, which is one of the kind of sources of compendium of Jewish law. It's like, tie this shoe on before this shoe. It's like, that's really arcane.
Yeah.
But the idea is that if you do all those things, then that amount of duty brings you to love the duty, love the law, love the community, and love right. God through all those things. And so, but that's because that's the way you train children. You don't train children to do what they love. You train children,
right.
And I think that we've actually made that mistake. I mean, you train children to do the thing they're supposed to do.
No,
and
that's
then
true.
And then they come to love the thing that they're supposed
yes.
to do.
But now I always tell people when people ask me about, you know, training kids, and I always tell them it's not enough to be moral and to be good. You have to love doing that. You know, like your kids have to see you happy. And
well, that's for sure true.
Yeah,
that's for sure true. If you're angry about having to do the duty,
right.
then your kids
right.
are not going to enjoy doing the duty, and they're not
right.
going to see any value in it. You
yeah.
have to be, happy in your work.
Yeah, right.
Right. I mean,
right.
That's in your service.
I'm torn about this because for me, love and duty have always been almost the same thing.
Like that's a lucky thing.
Yeah, I've been called. I feel like from the earliest days, I felt called to do a thing. You know, mm-hmm. and I have done that thing. Right, like. When I wrote the book you were making fun of, the great good thing, I wrote my memoir. One of the things that really got me, because, you know, I spent most of my life joking around, you know.
Yeah.
But one of the things that got me is how serious I was.
It's a very serious, yeah.
I mean, I thought, who the hell is that guy, you know? But yeah, I've been very serious about it, and I was very serious about love. And I was very serious about love even in, you know, when the moment that came before that happy period in my life was the moment when I said to myself, I am not going out with women I don't like anymore because I think I can sleep with them. I'm not going to do mm-hmm. that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, these things.
Okay, so then the duty sort of did precede the love.
Well, because you're, I was miserable. You know?
Right, but whether the duty comes out of misery or whether it doesn't come out of misery, it's pre-commitment to a moral system that allows you to live free within a moral system.
I think that's true. I do think that is true. I think for me, always, when I found that thing that was a positive good, that I could follow. It was like negative things always, I rebel, I'm a rebellious
right,
artist,
right.
Like, you know, so like when I found that positive thing, you know, giving up cigarettes was so I could breathe better and exercise better. It was not because I'm doing this bad thing. If it was that, I'd still be smoking, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, whenever I could find the positive moral thing to do, then if it entailed giving up other things, I was fine.
Well, maybe that's what we need. I mean, both as a civilization and religiously, we need to make the affirmative case that this is a better way of life.
Yes, I think that I do think that. This is why I get so annoyed with Christians whose whole thing is what other people shouldn't do. This is why I actually believe Jesus said, judge not. If that's what you're doing, you're actually, you know, making yourself repellent, you know, and that your inner world is wrong. We know that, you know, as you said, if you look honestly, you become humble. So why aren't you thinking about that? Why are you thinking about what this other person is doing, which can only be negative? It can only be stop doing that, right? And for me, always, I want to lose weight. I have to think about the fact that I'm losing weight, not the fact that I'm not going to eat that thing. You know, it's like I always have to do that. And I feel like, I mean, there were leaps I took when I was baptized. I took a leap because I thought this is crazy. You know, this is like crazy stuff. And then the joy was instantaneous. I mean, it was like 2 weeks later, my wife turned to me and she said, what the hell happened? You're like a totally different person. You know, it was just that thing. And I have followed joy and love always. And it was why when I went nuts, I always think about this. Like this part of my life I actually believe is miraculous. I'm the only person I know who ever went crazy and then went sane, like completely sane, you know? There was an Onion headline, psychiatrist cures patient, and I would say, like, that's, you know. but one of the things was is that I thought I should be happy. I thought I should be joyful. I knew inside my mother said that to me like once. You used to be, when you were little, you were so joyful. What happened? And I said, I wanted to say you, Mom. I didn't, you know, I followed the rules, but you know, I thought I was supposed to be joyful. And like that, I think that saved me in some crazy way because it didn't make sense to me to be here. I feel this way every day, really, you know, just the fact that you're here. It's like, it's a big thing, you know, it's a gift. And like, and I've, you know, even though, like I said, we may not get through the next 20 minutes, we still have me here. Like, I haven't wasted it. It's been like a joy. It's been, you know, and I don't know. That's what I'm selling. That's the thing that I'm selling always because it's what works for me.
Alrighty, folks, that's just part of the conversation I had with Andrew Klavan. It's a very long and awesome conversation. Go check out the whole thing over at dailywireplus.com right now, and we will see you here tomorrow. Folks, we'll get some more on this in just one second. First, Joe Biden's policies, you know, I'm not a fan. I think it's pretty stupid, but you know what else is stupid? Not having life insurance. Getting life insurance will give you peace of mind, knowing that if something were to happen to you, your family could cover expenses while getting back on their feet. Policy Genius has licensed award-winning agents and technology that makes it easy to compare life insurance quotes from America's top insurers in just a few clicks to find that lowest price. Their team of licensed experts is on hand to help you through the process. Even if you already have a life insurance policy through work, it might not offer enough protection for your family's needs, and it might not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies starting at just $292 per year for $1 million in coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid those unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, which means they don't have the incentive to recommend one insurer over another. Save time, save money, provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head on over to policygenius.com/Shapiro to get your free life insurance quotes. See how much you could save. That's policygenius.com/Shapiro, policygenius.com/Shapiro.